Thank you once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I am Harry Brady, and this is podcast number 208. It is this time of year that those of us of a certain age start to think back to the tumultuous times of March, February and January 1994. Prior to March 94, when Fergus came in, saved the club from the oblivion that Rangers went through, and 27,000 of us are now shareholders and owners of Celtic. With it being the 20th anniversary, I thought it might be appropriate to speak to someone from that time and to speak to one of the players synonymous with that era. So I decided to pick one of the better ones, and that was Carol Muggleton, an England under 21 goalkeeper. By the time Carol came to Celtic at age of 25, he'd had approximately 100 games of first team football with Leicester and many other clubs. It was a challenging time at Celtic, and Lou McCarrie had his ways with the team. Carol then went on to play with many other clubs, but the most important thing is, you'll hear from, coming through loud and clear from this, is that Carol just loved playing football. So, without further ado, this is me, Harry Brady, and this is him, Carol Muggleton. This week I am joined by Leicester, Stoke, Cheltenham, Chesterfield, Mansfield, legend and Celtic legend, Carol Muggleton. Carol, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you doing? Right. The list goes on, doesn't it?
The list does go on, actually. You'll notice that I left out, well, you'll be able to account better than me, I think I maybe left out 10 teams there.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, there's one or two. Yes. Yeah, a lot of loan clubs, a lot of loan ones.
Yeah, so there are a lot of loan ones. I mean, principally your biggest group of appearances are for Chesterfield, Leicester and Stoke.
Yeah, yeah.
Chesterfield sort of bookending your career.
Yeah, pretty much. I started there. I was on loan, started at Leicester as a scholar, as what they're called now, apprentice, uh-huh. Back in the day. Had a couple of years apprenticeship, and then we signed professional. Just before I signed professional, just after I signed professional, I went on loan to Chesterfield as a 17-year-old, mm-hmm. and started my league career. They gave me my league debut. Went here, there and everywhere. If I wasn't playing in the first team somewhere, I'd try and go out on loan somewhere just to play football.
Yeah.
It's all about playing football, you know, playing first team football. And yeah, towards the end of my career, I ended up going back there.
It's interesting, just before we get on to other stuff, it's one of the debates we on our podcast here have been having is Celtic regularly have some of the best youngsters in Scotland by a country mile.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But there's very few of our youngsters get to first team football.
Yeah.
And for some of these Celtic youngsters, going out on loan seems to be the first step of going out of the door. Whereas I'm looking at it thinking, but surely going out on loan, giving them first team football is what will turn them into footballers.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what it's, well, you imagine that's what it's primarily for, just to give them an experience of playing men's football, if you like, getting out there and getting league appearances and getting that bit of experience.
Yeah, so you went through, out for people who don't know, you were at Chesterfield on loan, so that was when you were 19?
I just turned 18, or just before my 18th birthday, I think it was.
And then, so you were there for 17 games, then you went to Blackpool, Hartlepool, yeah. Stockport, and then you were at Liverpool for a couple of years on loan?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, Kilkenny took me there.
Right. Because was that round about the time you were England, on the fringe of England under 21?
Yeah, just before, what would it be, just after that, I played. For instance, I was at Leicester, obviously, and had a phone call to go with the under-21s to France in Toulon. And we had a tournament in Toulon and ended up playing a game out in Toulon against the French national team. So that was good.
Obviously. Yeah, and what sort of players were at Liverpool when you were there?
Obviously, Kenny was manager. Kenny was manager, Dalglish. In the first team was Ian Rush was still there, mm-hmm. John Barnes, Peter Beardsley, Jan Molby, Alan Hansen was just finishing his career, so I was going there primarily to be in like a number two step, you know, backup keeper. So playing for the reserves, and Alan Hansen was just sort of finishing his career in the reserves. So that was a great learning curve and a great experience for me to obviously play with the likes of him. Gary Gillespie, he was there. So yeah, there were some great players there, some great experiences playing behind and watching the talents that were at the top of the profession within that you know, that stage of the year.
And all of that time in your late teens through early 20s. So was it difficult? I mean, I know it's in training and all these sorts of things, but is it difficult to exert your authority? Because that's one of the things goalkeepers have got to do if you are in the environment with such experienced people.
Yeah, you can get overawed by it. So it's it's quite difficult. But by which time I'd been out on loan, I'd played quite a few games in league football. Yeah. So that was the experience you were talking about earlier. You know, I was getting that experience playing with men, learning what the game was about, and at the lower levels, which was league Division 3, Division 4 at that stage. So you know you knew the harsher parts of football, you know, how people were going to be with you and how to react against, you know, what they were doing and what people were up to.
And then you started playing a bit more first team football for Leicester?
Yeah, I went back from Liverpool and ended up actually playing most of the season then the following for that year. So that was it was great experience. Mike Hooper went to Leicester while I went to Liverpool.
Right. And you then did you play at Wembley?
Yeah, I played in the playoff final in 92. In 92, I played in the playoff final against Blackburn. Saved a penalty, yeah. Yeah. We conceded a penalty in the first half, which they scored, and then conceded a penalty in the second half, of which I saved, you know, so it was obviously a great memory.
Yes.
Although it's disappointing, but, you know, on a personal point of view, it's always a great memory to have. I don't think there were many people who'd saved the penalty within the 90 minutes of a game at Wembley.
No.
So obviously a few penalty shootouts and stuff. So.
Before we get on to other things, what was your technique in a penalty?
Oh, I can't give that away.
Did you have one?
Yeah, I'm just making out. I knew what I was doing. It was really just watch how people ran up, really. If they ran at a certain angle, they could only put in a certain direction. And you know, I was lucky enough, I guess the right way and saved the penalty there. So saved one or two in the end. Saved one or two penalties. I didn't do two.
So during that time that you were at Leicester, and then you went to Stoke on loan and played six games. Was Lou McCarry your manager at Stoke when you played those six games on loan?
Yeah, Lou was there. Lou took me to Stoke from Leicester. There was a scout called, Painter, Mr. Painter. He took me from Leicester to Stoke. And I went there really as a number two. I went and sat on the bench for probably four or five games before he actually put me into the team. I ended up making my debut against Man United in the Coca-Cola Cup. Mm-hmm. And he played me at Old Trafford from the first game, so it was a bit a bit daunting. I think it was about we travelled up to Manchester, sat in a hotel all afternoon, go to the bed, go have a sleep, do whatever, have a bite to eat, and then we got to the ground. I think it was a 7:45 kickoff, and he announced the team about an hour before kickoff. And just he announced me in the team, and that was the first time I knew about it.
Right.
I ended up going out and playing. We got beat in the end. Brian McClair scored and Lee Sharp scored, I think.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, you know, fantastic place to go and play your debut for the club. But, yeah.
What league was Stoke in at the time?
They'd just gone up to, it was League One, which would be the Championship now.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was a good opportunity for me to go out and play games. Leicester had just signed another keeper, so I went out and just again, because I wasn't playing the first team, I just wanted to go and play football.
Yeah.
That was my thing. I just wanted to play, get as many league games as I could.
And then Lou McCarrie got the Celtic job
Yeah.
and then came to sign you for Celtic.
Yeah, Lou. I went back to Leicester when Lou got the job. I went back. Joe Jordan took over at Stoke. When Joe came in, I went back to Leicester. And within a week or so, I went to Sheffield United, and I went and played it. I went to Sheffield United, and I think they were in the Premiership at the time, with Harry Bassett,
All right, yeah.
and sat on the bench there. And again, it was just great experience there, going to sit on the bench of the Premiership. Then about, I think, halfway through the second month, just after Christmas, I got a phone call saying that Lou wanted to take me to Celtic. And that, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable phone call, really.
Yeah.
Just, it's not the sort of phone call you're sort of really expecting. But no, I mean, no, it was great. It was an opportunity you couldn't turn down.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. So, obviously, every football fan thinks their club's the greatest club in the world and the biggest club in the world and whatever. We obviously have an opinion of Celtic. But there was peculiar circumstances. So, first of all, did you know much about Celtic apart from they were a big club? And
Not
you can be
really.
honest.
Not really. The a massive club. Obviously, it was a big club. It was a big thing with the Rangers, Celtic, and all the things that were going on up there. And you knew what was going on, but you didn't realise how big it was until it actually got there.
Right.
No, it's incredible.
Now,
Incredible.
when you got there, did you have any inkling of the turmoil that the club was going through when you arrived?
No. In a word.
Would you have, see, if you had your time again, would you have gone?
Oh, yeah.
Would you?
Yeah, oh, yeah. You get a chance to go to a club like that, you've got to go. You've got to go to, it's potentially massive, massive club.
So you went to Celtic. How quickly did you realise there was a bit of a problem?
Obviously, the way things were within the dressing room, you knew the underlining things that was happening. Everybody was just getting on with the football.
Well, that's one
So
of the things I was going to ask you, because
the football was just getting on with the football.
the media often talk about, but players don't care less what's happening in the boardroom because they just play football. Is
Yeah.
that the case?
Pretty much. I mean, when it all came down to it, because I think there was a thing in the paper, the Viewer, about is it the five lads, weren't it? The five senior players. So right towards the end of it was Charlie Nicholas, Paddy Bonner, who was the other Grant, Peter Grant, Paul McStay, and they did a thing. I remember them doing a piece in the paper up there, literally before the end of. Lou's reign, or towards the end of that season. So it was, you knew sort of what was going to happen towards the end of it.
So, do you remember your Celtic debut?
Is it Aberdeen?
Well, that's one of the things I was going to ask you, because we had a game against Aberdeen postponed because of fog
That's right.
on the 15th of January, and then we replayed them and drew 2 each. And I think, were you on the bench?
I was on the bench, yeah.
Then your first 6 league games in goals for Celtic, you didn't let in a goal.
No, it's incredible. Incredible. Great. We had a great defence at the time. I'd say a great defence. We had, the likes of Tony Mowbray at the middle of the back. And things went really well. It was, an unbelievable start. An unbelievable start. I mean, 6 clean sheets. Fantastic. Great. Unbelievable start. You couldn't wish for a better start.
Yeah. And you were 25 years of age at that point, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so was that close to the peak of your career, or do you think you were better a couple of years later? Or?
I think you get into the start probably of your peak. I think you can get better as you get older as a keeper.
Now, you mentioned Pat Bonner. He was there at the club. Do you remember the other goalkeepers who were there at the time?
Gordon Marshall went to Stoke on loan.
Right.
When I first started going to, when I went to, when I first went there.
Mm-hmm.
So Gordon was back down there. And we had a lad, Stewie Kerr.
Yep.
Youth team. With Shay.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And we had all the goings on with what happened with Shay at the end of the season as well.
Mm-hmm.
The letter, not getting receiving the letter and all that sort of stuff, I think it was. Or the contract offer, or whether he was getting a contract offer. From what I vaguely remember.
Now, one of the things I do wonder, I just touched on the challenges of arriving at Celtic at the time. Because there was a bit of a mix. You had some core people like Charlie Nicholas, Paul McStay, Peter Grant, who were Glasgow Celtic people.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So I did wonder whether it was difficult relationships in the dressing room because they were focused on what the mess that was going on around the club, or whether, getting back to your point, of players are players and they don't really care.
Yeah, I think they were Celtic through and through.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew all the what was going on from boardroom down, supporters, everything, seemed to know everything what was happening around that sort of era, that stage. The rest of the players, probably the younger players, players that had only been there for a short time, they were just getting on with the football. Turning up, enjoying playing, enjoying training.
And do you remember the Kilmarnock game? The Kilmarnock game is famous among Celtic supporters because that was the game that the Celtic supporters decided to boycott.
Yeah.
And there was, the official attendance was 10,200 or something like that, because 10,000 was the threshold amount and most people estimated that it was 8,000 there. And the thing that was most remarkable was the game was stopped because a fox ran on the pitch.
Oh, yes, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Was it weird being at such a big club and nobody turning up for games?
Yeah, and there's the big stadium, and then you got, cause you've been there. I mean, the crowds weren't as big as what they are now,
no.
I think, at that stage. But even going to that lesser amount as it was at that stage was almost like, you could say it was almost like playing in a reserve team game.
Yeah.
So it was a bit different. It was strange. It was, how was it? It's hard to sort of describe because, you know, you're going out there and you've still got to try and win the game as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, your run of not conceding a goal for Celtic was actually ended by the first home game after Fergus McCann had taken over.
Mm.
Was there a change of atmosphere within the club after the takeover happened, do you remember?
Yeah, there's a lot of anticipation of what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, whenever somebody takes over a club, there are always going to be changes. And it was just waiting for when and where and who, what the changes were going to be. So, even now, when somebody takes over a club, you've got the situation, you know, going on throughout the football leagues, people taking over a club, they always want to bring their own people in.
Now, my impression as an outsider is that once that happened, the players that Lou McCarrie had signed,
yeah,
were starting to be on a sticky wicket.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So,
and particularly the likes of yourself, Wayne Biggins, Lee Martin, you just got the impression as soon as that change happened that Lou McCarrie would eventually leave and that the players he brought in would go. Did you get that sense of it coming?
Not really, not to start with. As soon as Lou went in the summer, because he went in the summer, and you came back for pre-season, it was, what could I say? Tommy Burns had taken over, and he treated us all pretty all right, to be fair, when he came in.
Mm-hmm.
Kept everybody together, everybody did training, and the atmosphere was seemed to be all right. I do remember vaguely having a phone, having a conversation with Paul McStay about, you know, whether you're happy here and all that sort of stuff. But no, I was, we'd just, myself and wife, we just had the youngest, or our eldest now, mm-hmm. we just had the baby, and he was, we had him in the November, so this was July, so he was about 6 months old, and we'd literally just moved into a new house mm-hmm. in Bothwell. So we'd been only been in the house.
2 weeks.
Yeah, we was in the house a week before we started pre-season, and started pre-season training. It was only about 2 weeks into pre-season that Tommy Burns called me into the office and said, we've had an offer from Stoke. I've accepted the offer. Virtually go and sort yourself out with personal terms down there. And we were literally, I got home, told my wife, Justine, and it was a matter of just getting in the car, driving down there, calling Pickford's and getting the removals van sorted back around the house. And we literally, we were settling down, meeting the neighbours and everything. It was, you know, we were really looking forward to this day.
That's always one of the things, particularly nowadays with such highly paid footballers. I think people just take it for granted that, well, footballers are paid loads of money and they'll just jump around. Looking at your career with the amount of clubs, that must be the hardest thing.
A lot of the clubs have been within sort of travelling distance most of the time. We've moved a few times, but obviously when you make that big move from Leicester to Celtic,
mm-hmm.
I made my mind up that I was going to sort of, not cut all ties down here, but we were going to sell the house here, we were going to move up there and make a good, you know, real good thing of it. We're going to make a go of it. We moved up there. I got in a flat to start with in Hamilton,
mm-hmm.
A couple of bedroom flat. So we settled in up there. We had a couple of, Mark McNally, his mum and dad, used to babysit for us. So if we wanted to have a meal or anything, we had people, you know, offering to look after Thomas. And, you know, life was seeming really, you know, really good at the time. And we were, you know, really enjoying ourselves up there. People were coming up to stay with us, and it was great. I was, you know, and then to get that from the manager was a bit of a blow, really, to say that they'd accepted the offer and that was it. So, but no, you move on.
Yeah, my recollection is that Bonner was going to go to Tommy Burns at Kilmarnock. And it ran, you know, that was going to be happening. And then, of course, when Lou McCarry left, everybody knew that Tommy Burns was getting the job, and that deal for Pat Bonner to go to command was put on hold.
Mm. Yeah.
So I suppose Tommy Burns probably just wanted the people that he knew around him when he went into the...
Yeah, it's like everything, you know, that he knows. He had a lot of friends there with the likes of Packy, Charlie, Peter Grant. They're all, I think they're, you know, they knew him, he knew them. And like you say, the turmoil that the club had been through, it needed that stability, and he needed to get the people in that he needed to get in. And you know, that's the life of a footballer, I suppose. You get on, and it's just a bit. Let's say it was a bit disappointing. It'd been nice to have given a bit longer, a bit more of a chance to prove myself
mm-hmm.
again. Because we went away to Canada in the summer of that year on an end of season tour. And it was, you know, it went really well. You know, we did really well out there. I played all the games out there, and it was great. It was, and you know, fantastic experience. The amount of supporters that we saw out there. So it was, again, to come back, obviously to find out the manager got the sack, and then to come back in and only be back in for a couple of weeks before you moved on. Then it was a bit disappointing. At the time, you know, I really wanted to to be given the opportunity to try and get back in the side and prove my worth up there. But,
yeah, because you'd gone out of the side, because I was looking through. You didn't play against Rangers, did you?
No, I was on the bench for that game.
Yeah, that was the game when no Celtic fans were allowed into Ibrox.
That's right, yeah. And John Collins scored a free kick, bent it in the top corner.
Yeah.
Then you look round and there's like little bits of green all around the Ibrox Stadium where people have sneaked in and jumping around with their scarves and flags when we scored. Absolutely brilliant, amazing atmosphere. Considering there was no Celtic supporters supposed to be there. Amazing.
Yeah. So you then left and went to Stoke.
Yeah, went back to Stoke. Joe Jordan took me back there.
Yep.
Was an ex-Celtic man.
Yep.
And went back there, and I stayed there for about 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
In and out the side, playing, not playing, going out on loan when I wasn't playing. Again, just to keep playing football, just to enjoy playing football.
So after Joe Jordan, were you reunited with Lou McCarrie at Stoke?
Yeah, Lou came back, yeah. Again, it was a bit strange because around that time, I think that he came back. I think that was around about the court case time as well.
Mm-hmm.
So everything was sort of still going on from Celtic when he came in. But to be fair to him, he kept that away from us again. And that was just something else that was going on at the side, and he just focused on the footballing side of things at Stoke.
Now, one of the things, we're doing this on Skype, so I can see you, and every single time I've mentioned Lou McCarrie's name, you've smiled.
Yeah.
Now, there's not many, in fact, any Scottish-based player that you hear of talking about Lou McCarrie, who was at Celtic at that time, does not talk positively about him as a manager.
No.
What was your experience of Lou McCarrie as a football manager? Because you've obviously had a lot of football managers.
Yeah. He had his own way. when I first went to Stoke, we never worked on team play. We never really did a lot. It was all a psychological thing. It was all about him getting the right players at the club and then building the team from there. He didn't really work on set plays, didn't really work on team play. That was just his way. He just wanted fit players that could run. We did numerous laps around Parkhead, around the track.
Yeah.
That's what he wanted. He wanted fit players, and he wanted people to run around and work hard. And that's his thesis, what he really wanted, to get the players in with their talent, get them fit, and if they were fit and had that bit of talent as well, then he considers that he thought that they would be successful. Of which, the times that he was here, I mean. Trying to think before I came with him, he had this spell at Swindon,
mm-hmm.
And had reasonable success at lower levels down in England.
Now, one of the things I remember at the time I remember an interview. You talked about the five players at the end. I remember an interview with Charlie Nicholas saying. He was in one of the games and he heard this whistling noise going backwards and forwards above his head and he realised it was the ball.
Yeah.
having a go that Lou McCarrie basically had a long ball tactic, is that pretty much what it was? Get the ball up front and then see what happens?
He just wanted to play football in the final third.
Right.
If you could get the ball and play football in the final third. Hey, he liked players that could play football as well. He did get in players that could play football as well. So, but he didn't want it messed around at the back too much. He did like it played in the final two thirds, so the middle and the final third, definitely.
So, pretty much just get the ball up front and then see what happens from there.
In a way, but yeah, that's cutting it right back to the right back to the bones. That is, if you want to go down that, but he didn't mind you throwing it out as a keeper as long as you could get forward when you threw the ball out. You know, he didn't want you to throw it out to get back, to go back forward again, to come back out and go back forward again. You know, he wanted it thrown out with a purpose that you could go and attack. He wanted to attack teams.
You played under lots of managers. Who was the best manager you played under?
God, best one. Brian Little was probably a good one at Leicester. And he was the one that sold me to Celtic.
Yeah,
he came back to Stoke and had a year at Stoke as well when I was at Stoke. Very organised man. Socially, Howard Kendall was very good.
Right.
I was at Sheffield United, as you can probably understand. So I would, yeah, I would put them up there. They were, you know, they were good. They were, Harry Bassett was very organised, and again, you could say he's a little bit long ball, but he, again, you know, he, the organisation side of it with him, in preparation, and getting to know the teams before you played them. So you're working on things before, you knew what the players you were playing against, you knew their strengths, you knew the weaknesses. So, you know, you learn different things from different managers. You try to take the good stuff and move on, and try and disregard the rest of it. You know, whatever you don't think you don't like, then you just discard it and move on to whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, I work for myself now, but I have worked for a couple of companies, and there is one company that I worked for that they taught me a lot. They taught me basically whatever they did in business, I would do the opposite. So is there a manager that, who is the manager that the most of what he was telling you was, you were thinking, well, if I ever get to manage a football team, I'll not be doing that?
God, it's hard to say. Chris Kamara came to Stoke and as a manager, he was at Bradford, and he did really well at Bradford, to be fair to him. And he's fantastic on the TV now.
There's a but in this sentence, isn't there?
Nah, everything before but is bullshit. But he came to Stoke. We played on the Friday night. He did Sky TV and watched and did the game. We played at Bradford, which was the club that he left. And we won 2-1 at Bradford. And he took over on the following Monday. And he came into the club and he said, right, watched you, obviously saw you all play on the Friday night. If it's not broke, we're not going to fix it. And by this following Saturday, there was about 6 loan players had come in to play on the following Saturday. So I think he'd lost the dressing room from there on in. So, I would say from that, you learn a lot of what I wouldn't probably do if I went into a dressing room as a manager. That's probably something I probably wouldn't do.
You mentioned a phrase there which people use a lot nowadays in football: lose the dressing room.
Yeah.
Have you actually been in many dressing rooms where the manager has, like you've just said about Chris Kamara, lost the dressing room? What I mean by that is, are you playing for a team you think, do you know what, this guy's going to get the sack. If it's not this week, it's next week or the week after, and nobody's really bothering?
I wouldn't say not really bothering. I think you know when results aren't going for you. You do get the feeling, and you can get a feeling there's not much longer left. Because again, you know, if the manager goes, then you could be following him out the door as well.
You've, towards the end of your career, you played 112 games for Chesterfield.
Yeah, I went back there. Had a couple of years back there.
Where was your most enjoyable football?
I enjoyed it. Wherever I went, I thoroughly enjoyed my time, and I tried to make the most of wherever I went. Obviously, you go through the games, you go through your times where you were, going to Chesterfield the first time, getting league football for the first time, playing for your hometown club, Leicester, from Leicester, born and bred in Leicester, so playing for them was special. making your England under-21s debut. That was special. And having the opportunity to come up to Celtic, play for a club like Celtic was, you know, fantastic, fantastic. Went to Stoke, had 8 great years at Stoke, finished at Stoke. I went to Cheltenham for a year. That was probably a little bit more of a indifferent year. Mm-hmm. Halfway through that year, I went on loan to Bradford. But again, it was just great. I'd come from a Division 4 club, if you like, and I was playing in the Championship for Bradford, and I couldn't get in the team at Cheltenham. So, you know, that was a bit strange. But managers think of different things, don't they?
Yeah.
And then going back to Chesterfield, where you started your career and played, like you say, over 100 games for them. So that was, you know, it was special to go back there because people, obviously, you remember you that remember me going there as a skinny 17-year-old lad, mm-hmm. going in goals there, not really knowing what to expect. But the week before I went there on loan for the first time, they got beaten 10-0 by Gillingham. So to go there after that as a 17-year-old, they were obviously sort of wondering what they were going to get.
So
a lot of people there followed me through my career as well. So, you know, you're appreciative to them as well. So to go back there was special as well.
Now you said Leicester was your home team. So
yeah.
Is that, you are a Leicester fan?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I grew up in Leicester, born in Leicester. So, you know, that's what you do, isn't it? That's what you're supposed to do, isn't it? You're not supposed to put your Man United in that, are you?
No, you're supposed to vote your local team. So, where do you stay in Leicester now, don't you?
Yeah, still live in Leicester. I moved back to Leicester halfway through Stoke when I was at Stoke for that time, and then just travelled pretty much with the other place that I went. I'm coaching now at Gillingham, mm-hmm. which is a couple of hours away. So I end up staying down there through the week and then come back. Obviously, the wife and the kids are settled here.
Yeah. Is your son Sam, is he still giving it a go as a professional footballer?
Yeah, Sam's still with us. The oldest lad's doing a plastering. The oldest one that was the young boy when we first came up to Scotland. Mm-hmm. So he's on a plastering course. He seems to be enjoying that. And Sam, he's... into his second year of his scholarship at Gillingham. Mm-hmm. Made his first team debut last year, the last game of the season against Burton Albion. And he's doing all right. He's doing all right.
So if you're down there doing some coaching, you keep an eye on him?
I have to. I don't know whether he's keeping an eye. I'm keeping an eye on him or whether he's keeping an eye on me, I'm not sure. I don't know what sent him down there to keep an eye on me.
So are you there at match weekends or are you there during the week and come home at weekends?
I'm there mostly, I stay there Monday night. If we've not got a game on the Tuesday, then I'll come home on the Tuesday after training. We're off on a Wednesday and then got Thursday, Friday, and then for the game on the Saturday. So it's pretty full on.
So how would you feel if Gillingham played Leicester?
Obviously, I'd want Gillingham to win. Obviously.
Well, unless Leicester look like they're going to be playing Premiership football next season.
Yeah, they're doing fantastic at the minute.
Question is whether Nigel Pearson will be manager when they're playing the Premiership next season.
Yeah, he's coming for a lot of stick towards the end of last season. It looked like people were against him at one stage, and he's turned it round fantastic this year. They managed just to sneak in the playoffs last year and just dipped out with the playoff semi-final against Watford. So to turn it round again and get everybody going again and compete again this year, he's done fantastic. We've got some good players there.
But I understand he's not signed a new contract yet, is that right?
No.
His contract expires at the end of the season.
He keeps... In the press, he's keep putting it off. I'm not really sure, but that seems to be what everybody's sort of saying. He keeps putting it off at the minute, but concentrating on what they're doing.
It's just because I occasionally hear rumours about a guy who used to play for Leicester who manages a football team in Scotland.
Yeah, Neil.
Yeah.
He's, well, I spoke to Neil that the LMA dinner ended last season.
Mm-hmm.
I still speak to Neil every now and again, Lenny. He's actually invited us back up there at some stage, so I must get back up there and go up and see him.
Well, do you know if he's still around as manager? You should come up for the first game of next season because Fergus McCann will also be at Celtic that day.
Will he?
Yes. So I don't know whether you want to shake his hand or ring his throat.
No.
One other thing is on goalkeepers and your coaching. Fraser Foster.
Oh, yeah. Doing fantastic.
Do you think he needs to leave Celtic to be the England goalkeeper? Or to be a stick-on for England's first, you know, to be in the mix for the England goalkeeper position? As Celtic fans listening won't take offence if you say
No. I think there's always, I remember from growing up, and I was, you know, going back to the England under-21s, it was always, everybody down here found it difficult to get into the England setup, whether it was under-17s, under-18s, under-19s, under-20s, 21s. It always seemed to be that they favoured the London-based clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still down here, I think, a little bit less now, but it does seem to be the London-based clubs seem to get favoured at the lower levels, and I think that's still the case a little bit in the senior levels. So we're still the same. So he probably needs to move to a London club maybe to give himself a chance of getting in the England setup.
Yeah, so he needs to be Arsenal keeper or something like that.
Yeah, so...
He wouldn't go to...
Not known to be a favourite one of the England boys, but Chelsea. It'd be a shame for him to leave. But if he felt he needed to get down there, and I would think he'll be being advised by the England setup as well.
I was going to say, if you were advising him, would you tell him to leave?
No, because he's probably playing some of the best football he's probably played at the minute.
So would you stay on as long as he's playing?
Yeah.
Because the thing that strikes me about you...
It's his squad.
Yeah, the thing that strikes me about your career is the most important thing for you was playing football.
Yeah, definitely.
And as long as he's playing football?
Yeah. He's got a chance to being involved with the England squad. Because... And again, if he moves down south and things don't quite work out for him, then you just don't know whether, you know, as soon as you're out of favour or not playing, then, you know, you tend to get looked over quite rapidly.
Yeah. And one other thing, I often wonder, players have been around and played for lots of clubs. Again, we fans always think of players as our heroes. But if you play for lots of clubs... Do you keep an eye on the scores of every club you've played for?
Pretty much, I look at all the scores.
Jeez.
Won any money? not allowed to bet on games.
I was going to say, a friend of yours might have put a bet on.
So funny. No, I do check on all the scores. But, you know, you do watch for, you know, most of the club you've been at, you watch for the results.
Okay, so you do still keep an eye out. One of the things I wondered was whether the time you were at Celtic, it wasn't a great time to be at the club, whether that would have made you think, you know what, I had enough of that team and not that fussed about it.
Oh, no. I've still got fond memories of the people that I met, the places that we went while we were there, people that we, you know, the people around the club that were around the club at the time. And I thoroughly enjoyed my time up there.
And that's another thing, when you're moving about so many clubs, do you get a chance to keep in contact with people?
Yeah, I think your ship's passing in the night for most of the people that you come across in football. Mm-hmm. But you do keep in touch with quite a few of the players that you come across through your career. You do.
Okay, well. I've taken up enough of your time because that's 3/4 of an hour that we've had that. So,
sorry, flat. I'm having fun, eh?
Yes, exactly. So I will. I will say thanks for joining us on the Celtic Underground podcast, Carl. Thanks, and thanks for your time at Celtic. Your record of 6 consecutive league clean sheets took 10 years to get broken.
Oh, yeah, I think it was Rab, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah,
Rab broke it. Yeah. because Reb came down to Leicester.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
Yeah, so I can say, still speak to Reb every now and again. He's coaching up there at, is he at Falkirk or somewhere like that?
Well, because he was at Dundee, and last I heard he was he played a game for Montrose or Forfar or something like that.
He's still going then.
Yes, I think he's just one of these people who will just keep playing until somebody...
Until
somebody wheels him off somewhere.
Yeah. No, good.
Okay, thanks, Carl.
Thanks a lot. Cheers. All you young rebels,
endless while I sing. That was Carl Mulgerton, a lovely guy. And the thing that came through for me in that conversation is he just really liked to play football and just wanted to play football. You can see that in the career stats. He's every time he's been out of somebody's first team, he's gone and asked to go and play somewhere else on loan, so that he's just playing football. That was CelticUnderground.net's 208th podcast. There'll be more to come. I'm Harry Brady saying good night. Thanks for downloading and listening, and good night. My home is in Motherhood, where I was weaned. I learned all my life, injustice to blame, and so I am part of the patriot game. It's barely 2 years since I wandered away with a local battalion of the old IRA. They told me I'm hero. I wanted the same, to play a great part in the patriot game.